This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Victoria Walker. Dr. Walker's got a fascinating story, does a tremendous amount with the aging population, with the elderly population. Dr. Walker, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself, and tell us what the Good Samaritan Society is?
Sure. So I'm a family practice doctor by background, and I have been working with the Good Samaritan Society for 6.5 years as their oversight for clinical and quality services. And so Good Samaritan Society is a nonprofit provider of services to people that are aging, and there's a lot of different types of services that we provide. So skilled nursing, assisted living, home care, hospice, independent living. And so we have over 30,000 residents and clients that we care for daily, and we're in 24 different states.
Amazing. Could you tell me, how did you get started with the Good Samaritan Society? How did you make part of your practice dealing with the elderly population, you know, starting as a general practitioner? How did you move in that direction?
Sure. Well, when I started out, I was doing family practice in a small community where I cared for people and all different parts of the community. So I was in the nursing home, I was in the hospital, and I was the volunteer hospice medical director. And I always enjoyed caring for the seniors, but I didn't initially recognize that was going to become such a big part of my practice until I transitioned to caring for seniors that were in the geriatric psychiatric units in our state hospital. And I really found that I just appreciated serving that population. And that was the transition that got me into the current role with the Good Samaritan Society.
Well, fantastic. And what's it like today in a small community, just to step back one second, what's it like in a small community being a family practice physician today? Is it sort of a, you know, more a reminder of yesteryear where you get to care for people with more time and take time with them and know them and relationship build, which can be harder in some of the bigger cities with huge, you know, amounts of patients per day and so forth. What's that like being a family practice physician today in a smaller town?
Well, you know, I think that it is a bit of a callback to yesteryear as far as the types of relationships that you have with your patients, because in most of your smaller communities, you don't necessarily have the hospitalist kind of system set up. So there's much more continuity of caring for people throughout their health journey. So, you know, in many small communities, family practice doctors are caring for the whole family, including delivering babies and caring for people in the nursing home and doing school physicals and, you know, just the whole gamut. And so, you know, I think that it's a really rewarding career and also pretty exhausting career, but it's, you know, I think that there's nothing like making those connections with people.
Well, fantastic. And tell us about, in serving as a provider for the aging community, tell us what are some of the big issues, the big trends. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think when you're caring for people as they're aging, I think that you know, we all sort of theoretically know that at some point in time we're mortal and our life will come to an end. But I think the older you get, the more that becomes, you know, something that you understand in your gut much more than you did when at a younger age. And so I think a lot of people as they age are really looking at what matters in life, and relationships rise to the top of that list of priorities. And so I think that as we're caring for elderly, it's really of utmost importance that we just stop and have conversations about really understanding those relationships and what matters to them, and that we plan care decisions around really being focused on supporting what matters most to them.
Thank you. And talk to me about this issue, the psychological issue. I had the pleasure of reading the book Being Mortal, which talks about aging, you know, aging and the desire for the aging population to have more independence, but often the desire for the children of the aging populations or aging parents to want more control over the parent in a safer environment where the parent often would rather stay home versus being in a community or whatever the issues might be. Can you talk to me for a moment about some of the psychological issues of dealing with the aging?
Yeah, I think that this really is a conundrum, that you know, people express a desire to stay at home, yet we have a often a shortage of resources to help people stay at home successfully. And we're so mobile as a society that oftentimes children no longer live in the same communities as their parents. And so it becomes a difficult line to walk there between respecting independence of where people wish to live, finding the appropriate support to help them successfully live where it is they want to be, and balancing that dignity of making your own decisions versus the reality that sometimes there's risk that comes with decisions that people make, and deciding how much risk is okay to take. And it's not a black and white type of thing. It can be pretty complex to navigate.
Thank you. And then one of the questions I was asked to talk to you about is something called the 4 M's in an age-friendly system. What are the 4 M's? What does that mean? That's a new term to me, apparently not to you, but talk to our audience about what the 4 M's are.
Sure. So thanks for asking. And I think I sort of started talking about this a little bit when I visited about what matters to people. And the 4 M's are part of what's known as the age-friendly approach to healthcare. And it asks healthcare providers to focus on what matters to the people that they're caring for and making sure that that care does align with what matters to them. Mobility is the next, and that is ensuring that each person is able to stay as mobile as possible so that they can continue to do the things that are important to them. Mentation is the third M, and that is really focusing on making sure we don't inadvertently give people medications lack of stimulation of to optimize how well they're thinking. And then the fourth M is medication, and that is to really focus on using age-friendly medication prescribing to minimize the impact on mobility and mentation.
In terms of mentation, I don't know how much this also plays into the discussion of Alzheimer's and issues of that sort. Are those related?
Absolutely. And so, I would say that with Alzheimer's or other types of dementia, we're really trying to focus on making sure that we identify that somebody is starting to experience that earlier. Not because, unfortunately, we don't have great cures for it, but the earlier somebody knows about this, the more they can be involved in planning for what they want their future to look like. And so it's really helpful to family members to be able to have conversations about what their wishes are at a time that they're actively able to participate in the conversation.
In terms of epidemics, issues, et cetera, any quick thoughts on trends in Alzheimer's, trends in mentation amongst the elderly?
So I would say with Alzheimer's in particular, there has been a lot of work poured into finding medications that would be able to slow the progress of the disease. And I would say that currently the focus is really on intervening earlier. We know that once the disease is really set in, that the medications don't work to reverse. And so there's a lot of emphasis on doing trials to identify those at risk and start intervening at an earlier stage to try to prevent that decline. So that's one big trend. And then the other I would say is really that focus on planning and allowing people to be actively involved with their planning ahead of time so that we can care for them in the way that is most consistent with what they want if they get to a point where they're no longer able to share that. So those are the two big focuses, I would say. The other is really trying to focus on making communities more dementia friendly and recognizing that the way that communities are structured can either make it easier or harder for people to function with dementia. And so that's another effort underway throughout the country.
Thank you very, very much. And then for those that are sort of in the acute care world, talk a little bit about some of the differences in care when somebody's in acute care versus post-acute versus senior care, and how that manifests itself and how differently you care for a patient, if there is a difference.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that, you know, probably the biggest difference is that when somebody has a hospitalization or they're in acute care or in a clinic, they're there for a very brief amount of time. Maybe a couple days, maybe only 30 minutes. And so it's that interaction is really very focused on the current problems at hand. When somebody transitions and is living in a senior care community or a nursing home, it's different because now this is their home and they're there, you know, pretty much 24/7. And when you are interacting with somebody, not just for hours or days, but for weeks and months and sometimes years, the relationship changes considerably. And so I'd say that's one big difference. The other is that the focus on being person-centered and what things are ordered is different as well. When you're sick and in the hospital, you know, we often don't worry too much about being person-centered. You know, there's an illness present and there's a pretty straightforward prescription of what best practice is to take care of them. It's different, though, when you're living with chronic conditions in your home for years. Oftentimes, you know, there's a lot more flexibility to adapt treatments to what the person desires as opposed to just what is established as best practice by medical studies.
Thank you. And then you've become passionate as you've transitioned your practice over the years into really dealing with the elderly, the aging population. How did you get excited about this? How did that become the thing that excites you? How did that become your sort of core focus? How does it excite you?
So I think that one of the things that just inspires me about caring for the elderly is that they have so much to contribute. They've spent their whole life learning and gaining wisdom and you know, to be able to serve them and learn from them at this point in time where they have so much to teach us is truly just such an honor. And that, you know, that I think is what really has drawn me to serve this population is just being able to be in their presence and learn from them is a real privilege.
What a positive attitude. And as we move into 2020, any projections for the senior care industry? What do you see going on? What's going on in this world?
So I think that in the coming years, we will see closer collaborations with acute care partners in bringing services on site. And so specifically, I think more on-site embedded nurse practitioners and physicians assistants working within senior living to bring those services right to people where they live. And that's becoming necessary because people often don't move into senior care facilities until they have fairly acute medical conditions that need support. So that's one thing I think we'll continue to see more of over the next years. Another is that we have within the healthcare system at large, a lot of focus on value-based payment systems. And I think we're going to see those infiltrate and be more inclusive of long-term care and home care in the future than they currently are. And so I expect that evolution of how we measure quality and outcomes will impact reimbursement in the future.
Thank you very, very much. And Dr. Walker, if people want to learn more about you and more about the Good Samaritan Society and what you're doing, or just wanted to hire you as a keynote speaker or find a way to interact with you, how do they reach you? How do they find out more about you or contact you?
Sure. So, Google is always a good way to find things easily. And if you put the Evangelical Lutheran Good Samaritan Society, it will take you to our webpage where you can link to myself or any of the other senior officials with the society. Also, I'm happy to give you my email address. It's vwalker3@good-sam.com. And I'm always happy to connect and answer questions.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Just a pleasure visiting with Dr. Walker. And I love people that are passionate about what they do, which you certainly are, and just a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks so much, Scott.